Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
I want to speak about failure and rock bottom as a catalyst. And I think that what you've become is the best possible outcome of rock bottom.
I grew up in a horse ranch in rural, super remote Colorado. I longed to get out and see the world. I was there captive and thought, I just need to be free. Everything in life is going to be amazing the moment I'm set free. And I started volunteering at old age homes. These people were Holocaust survivors and war vets and survivors of unthinkable things.
Of course, we can speak about human trafficking and rape, and those are very sad, disgusting, horrible topics. But I think that what I want to focus on you is how you've healed.
I spent a night looking in the mirror all night long going, what are you hiding for?
Welcome to Success Story. I'm your host, Scott Clary. The Success Story podcast is part of the HubSpot podcast network. HubSpot is a huge supporter of the show. I'm a huge fan of HubSpot, not just because they support the show, because they support entrepreneurs. And if you are an entrepreneur, you have some problems that a lot of entrepreneurs have. Productivity. And it's not a secret. It's nothing to be ashamed of. You're not the only one that has this problem. And why do we have this problem? Well, all the tools and the tech that we're using, they're massively overcomplicated. We have tons of time-consuming tasks. Our teams are not getting the information they need to close the deals, connect with customers, whatever it is. As entrepreneurs and our teams, we all have productivity problems, but HubSpot's customer platform truly helps. It was built to save time and make your job easier so you can get back to building your business. No more hours wasted on time-consuming tasks. No more chasing down prospect info if you're trying to close someone. No more one system for this, another system for that. HubSpot can help you find leads, reach prospects, deliver the insights you need to convert them to customers all in one place. Plus, HubSpot AI can literally do more work for you so you can focus more on scaling your business, because HubSpot knows you have massive growth goals and they're here to make your productivity problem go away. Visit HubSpot.com to learn how they can help you grow better. Cheryl, thank you very much for joining me. I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you speaking about your story. I think to start this off, I want to speak about failure and rock bottom as a catalyst. Because I think that rock bottom can push people in two directions. And I think that what you've become is best possible outcome of rock bottom. I think most people would hear your story and think that that's something that has never even come close to happening to them. So let's speak about rock bottom. Let's speak about something that most people can only, you know, have nightmares about that happened to you when you were much younger. And maybe think about how that's pushed you in the direction that you are in right now, how you sort of dealt with it, but also used it as a catalyst to a degree.
It's fascinating how rock bottom is as a phenomenon, right? There's no further to fall. And one could argue that, no, there's always further. But there was this time where, so let me just cut to the chase. I grew up in a horse ranch in rural, super remote Colorado. I longed to get out and see the world. I went with my best friend on a trip to Europe. Two men asked me if I was a model, told me they could make me one. I thought, I'm smart. I'm a ranch girl. I'm tough. I know how to drive a tractor and break a horse and wrestle a cow. I mean, hell, I can do anything. My smarts as a naive teenager and strength were nothing compared to these criminals who held me captive, tortured me, did every... You can fill in the gory details with your mind. But I was there captive and thought, I just need to be free. Everything in life is going to be amazing the moment I'm set free. And after a period of time, for Lord only knows what reason, I'd seen their faces, they dumped me off on this grassy area of ground, left me there for dead. And I thought, wow, okay, I'm free. Wait, hold up. As time progressed, days, hours, time went on, and I thought, I feel worse now. I'm still captive. It was absolutely vexing to think that, wait, everything, I was lying there for all this time on basically cement and in my own urine and praying, bartering with God, I'm going to be a good person if you let me go, if you let me live. I'll be nice to my brother and sister instead of always bossing them around. I'll hold my grandma's hand in public when she tries to hold my hand in the mall. I'm going to be a good person, you know? And here I am, I'm free, and there's no freedom. And there's this phenomenon that I recognized where captivity, where captivity really lives, is between our ears. And thank God I had the insight to say, I'm not the first person to go through something awful and unexpected that I didn't choose for myself. What have others done? I've got to learn from them. But first, there was that phenomenon of rock bottom. And while I was captive in my mind, you know, to the, and by captive, I mean, couldn't stop the negative spiral, downward spiral of thinking. My thoughts vacillated between, how am I going to get back at these men? How am I going to make them pay? To how am I going to survive, including how do I ensure that nobody ever finds out that I'm so damaged and ruined and filthy and used up?
Why was that?
It's just crazy thoughts, you know, and I worked with survivors for many years following this, but it's a common phenomenon of surviving something like that, violent crime, rape, etc., to think that we are to blame and that we are now soiled and sullied and ruined. And I speak a lot, do public speaking, and every time, invariably, someone will come up, wait in line afterward, and say some version of, I have never told anyone this, but... So it's just a common phenomenon. It wasn't just a thing that I was doing, but as I was at rock bottom and feeling captive in my mind, I thought, I started having thoughts that terrified me, where I thought, if I have to live like this, I'm a teenager. My grandma was old at the time. I'm like, if I have to live like 80 more years like this, I can't do it. The thing that scared me the most was I started empathizing with people who had taken their own life and going, okay, I'm not predisposed to thinking this, but I get it. I can't continue. I've got to end the suffering, or I've got to end it. I can't continue. This cannot be. So then it was a matter of, well, what have others who've gone through trauma learned? What have they done? I've got to find a way to talk to these people. I didn't want to read a book. It had to be, for it to be cathartic, I thought it had to be more active than simply reading a book. And so I started, through pure grace, I was told, well, there's an old adage that says, if you've got it hard, somebody's got it worse. Find them, help them. And I started volunteering at old age homes. And these people were Holocaust survivors and war vets and survivors of unthinkable things. And at first, I just sat and listened to them all day long. And eventually, I thought, wait, that worked, but that didn't. This guy went through the same thing that one did, and he overcame and lived a fruitful, productive life. And that one is bitter, understandably, but bitter, and never lived his life. Why? How? And I codified it. My mom designed curricula and education for school districts and was a university professor. And I asked her so many questions like, how do you create? I'm fascinated by adversity. I never said why, but, you know, hypothetically speaking, if one had experienced something not good, what? How do you create something to help others? But it was the rock bottom that I never realized until you said that, though, Scott, was the catalyst. It couldn't continue down that road.
There's a lot of probably misconceptions about trauma and how to heal from it. And with all the learnings and the things that you've codified over your lifetime and how you've even healed, I want to speak just very briefly about, because this is not going to be a podcast about, of course, we can speak about human trafficking and rape, and those are very sad, disgusting, horrible topics. But I think that what I want to focus on you is how you've healed, because I think that's the most important takeaway for somebody that has, God forbid, gone through something like this, even remotely close. Because I feel that, you know, I was listening to a couple shows that you were on before, and you were saying something about how the average friend will say, oh, don't worry, like, we're here with you. But that doesn't do much. It doesn't really help the person who's going through it. So then not only is it not helping the person who's going through the trauma or the post-trauma, but it's also the person who wants to help really isn't doing anything effective. Also, like the adage, like, time heals all wounds. You don't feel like that's accurate, and it's not truthful. It's not real for a lot of people, because you see people that go through trauma, and to your point, some people heal, some people don't. So when you look at the things, you've exposure to all these people helped you the most, but outside of exposing yourself to these people and hearing their stories and understanding, and you said you codified a lot of what worked and what didn't, what do you think is the things? Is it the people? Is it the process? Is it therapy? Is it trying to get back to, like, quote unquote normal? Is it having loved ones understand what you went through? It sounds like for a period of time, loved ones didn't understand what you went through. There's so many different things that you're dealing with, on top of the fact that you just went through the worst part of your life ever. If somebody has gone through anything like this, what would be the few different things or pieces of advice you could give them that actually sort of move the needle in their recovery?
So you said something, and I'm going to paraphrase it, but said something along the lines of, not everybody goes through something like this, or we don't all go through... However you said it, what's universal is every one of us goes through something we would never have chosen for ourselves. That is universal. We all face circumstances that we're like, oh, hell no. I don't want, I don't choose. I do not, I decline. And yet here is this steaming pile of crap in front of us. And there's no saying, I don't want it. It's here. And that is what life has given us. And everybody deals with that. And that is what's universal. And here's the biggest thing that made the difference for me: mission. Now, what do I mean by that? When I was a cowgirl in Rye, Colorado, or near Rye, Colorado, we were so remote, so middle of nowhere, I used to lie on the meadows, like among the horse paddies and the cow paddies and the horses and cows, and just lie on my back and look at the planes flying over. we were in the flyover zone, and I'd go, God, I just want to be the girl in the plane, looking down at the girl on the ground. But if I were to be her, I'd have to have some way to help people. I'd have to have something I could do for people. And I'm good at riding horses, but I'm not that good because, I don't always win when I compete, and I'm just not that good. It's not the thing I could give to people. This whole thing, this kidnapping, gave me the thing that I could give to people. Now, my first mission became I codified this education, and I started working with other survivors. Rape, sexual assault, violent crime, trafficking. And it worked. And it really helped them. And I thought, God, this is something I want to give away to the world. So my mission became give this away. Now, it wasn't my day job. My day job at the time, I started writing. It was always something I loved to do. And I wrote and sold and original television shows. And I had deals at studios and networks, like the, you know, big time stuff. And I thought, aha, you know, I can see the power that major media has to shape the entire conversation and the collective narrative that we have. What if I could use major media some the hell how to get this education and this message about it's possible to overcome adversity? What if I could get that out to the world? I thought, I'm connected enough, sort of. But it took me over a decade to finally do that. But my mission, back to your question, wasn't just the girl lying on the ground looking at the airplanes. It became, after I had this method to help people overcome adversity, it became my mission. I must give this away. And every time I helped anyone in any regard, my pain lessened. And my experience of being alive transformed. And I got to know myself as someone different. So I became less constituted by the past trauma and more constituted by the mission to give away what I'd learned. And so the mission was everything.
It's so interesting. It's like you frame the trauma in a way that you can now use it to help improve other people's lives. And this is what actually gives you purpose. And I think that that's very powerful. I truly believe that that's like the highest form of what most people aspire to be. I think humans are good. Humans are good. I believe that humans are good, and they always aspire to teach and to guide and to help others. Life gets in the way a lot of the time. But I think that's very powerful what you're saying, because I think there's a lot to it in reframing trauma, in reframing, if it's not trauma, regret, so that it can be used as like a very powerful tool. Again, like a catalyst. We can go back to that word, but it changes your entire perspective on life. So now you have a mission. I'm actually very curious, because obviously I see a massive mindset shift in between not telling your parents what happened versus telling the world what happened. What allowed you to, because it seemed like it was a healthy evolution of how you internalize what happened to you. What do you think allowed you to make that switch?
I don't think I've ever been asked that. That's such a good question, Scott. So here I am. I'm like, okay, I am alive. I feel alive when I'm helping people overcome their adversity. And when I'm sharing the message that it's possible to overcome anything that we've faced. And so I've got to get that out to people. And I kept trying, knocking my head against the wall, to get major media to pick up my message or my story or my expertise or my commentary or all of it. And every door was closed. I said,
even though you worked in the industry.
Even though I asked for introductions to gatekeepers, and you know, the people I knew made them, and I did not know that was the worst thing you could possibly do. And I had no media training, and I didn't know how to speak in sound bites, and it was a disaster. I still have never recovered from some of those. I was introduced to somebody from Good Morning America. I've still never been on that show because I made such a, I was blacklisted for making innocent mistakes that I just didn't know any better. But I had this mission. I was saying, I feel alive. I'm going to give this away. I'm connected and I'm going to, I kept sharing about adversity and it's possible to overcome adversity. I still wasn't sharing my story. I was still embarrassed. I was sharing it's possible to overcome adversity. And I've learned from these
it wasn't you.
Survivors who've taught me things. And I've learned from many of them. It's all hypothetical. And I finally had this real heart to heart with myself. I spent a night looking in the mirror all night long going, what are you hiding for? You are no longer a teenager. Are you going to share this with the world or not? Now, look, I realized that the final piece to transforming the trauma was to be able to own and share what had happened. For some people, that means you share with a therapist or a spouse or a friend, a trust in someone. For others, it's, nope, I got to give this away. I have got to share this with a large group of people. And I fell into the latter category, but I wasn't sharing it. It was all a hypothetical. You know, if you hypothetically went through something, you know, not good. And when I started finally sharing the story, and I'd learned all the other things that I had done wrong and stopped doing those, but then finally the media became interested. We have learned since time immemorial through story. I mean, the pictographs, the cave wall paintings, it's how we teach, we learn, we know ourselves and evolve and take things to heart and grow and all of it. And I was keeping the most important element out.
You know, there's a lesson there because I think that that disassociation with your own learned experience is the most significant blocker that people have when they tell their story, but to a much lesser degree than what you went through. So this is actually probably a very good lesson for people that are trying to put themselves out there, trying to tell their story, trying to tweet, go on social, whatever, go on podcast. How many people speak about what they think is other, you know, what other people's wisdom is or what other people have experienced, and they actually don't talk about their own wisdom. They don't talk about their own life because, well, it's scary. It's like you open yourself up. But at the end of the day, people want to connect with people, even if it's through, doesn't matter what format. It could be through print, it could be through MSNBC, Fox, it could be through Good Morning America, it could be through Twitter. People want to connect with other people. So you see the most successful people in the world, the best storytellers, are the people that literally speak about the shit they went through yesterday, this morning, whatever, 10 years ago. So now you see it. So now I'm seeing the evolution as to how you've done this for yourself. And now this was like an aha moment for you, obviously, because the second you bring out your own story, your own learned experience, then now it's received. And now people listen because they know that it happened to you. And that experience is so raw.
I know a lot of entrepreneurs listen to this show, and NetSuite has been a huge supporter for entrepreneurs, for business owners, because there's one thing that we all know. Business is about making money, and it's about your bottom line. And the less you spend on the nuts and bolts of running your business, the more profits you keep. But these days, everything is costing more. Supplies, people, shipping. It squeezes your margins, and I've been there, juggling multiple systems for finance, inventory, you name it. Each with its own costs and its own set of headaches. That's why I made the switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's changed our company. Think about it. NetSuite is one of the top financial systems out there. It puts your whole business on one platform, accounting, finance, the works. One data source for everyone. There's no more mismatched info. And because it's in the cloud, it slashes your IT costs. No more servers, no more updates. Just access NetSuite from anywhere. With one integrated suite, your overhead drops big time. And here's the real win. Efficiency. Everything's connected in NetSuite. Costs are ridiculous lately. Find a proven way to reduce your expenses and get better performance out of your team. It's a no-brainer, and that's what NetSuite offers. Over 37,000 companies have figured this out already. You have to join them. Right now, through to April 15th, NetSuite's got an incredible, flexible financing plan. Check it out and see the savings yourself at netsuite.com/ScottClary. That's netsuite.com/ScottClary. Today's sponsor is BetterHelp. Now, hear me out. If you magically had an extra hour in a day, and I know sometimes that's the only time we get to ourselves, what would you do with it? Maybe you would catch up on sleep. Maybe you'd hit the gym. Maybe you'd finally get into that book that you've been eyeing. We're always wishing for more time. But what if we focused on how we use the time that we have? Think about what really lights you up. What would change in your life if you made that a priority? Do you even know what that thing is? Well, therapy has been a game changer for me, not because of some terrible thing that's happened to me, but because it's helped me figure out what matters, how to manage tough emotions, how to be a better friend, a partner, business person, and just really person all around. So if you're even a little curious about therapy, if you want to help think through what matters to you, what to prioritize, how to live your life, try BetterHelp. It's totally online and works around your crazy schedule. No awkward waiting rooms. Just get matched with a licensed therapist and start making the most of the time you've already got. Learn how to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/successpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/successpod. Today's show is brought to you by 1Password. Now listen, we all have that one friend who's constantly forgetting passwords and needing help to get into their accounts. I have a solution. It's called 1Password. 1Password is the award-winning password manager trusted by millions of users and companies like IBM and Slack to keep logins, credit cards, and other private info safe in an encrypted vault that only you can access. No more sticky notes with passwords or using the same password everywhere. I've been using 1Password for a year now, and I can't recommend it enough. It saves me time from having to reset passwords and gives me peace of mind knowing my info is secure. With convenient features like automatic password generation and login autofill, 1Password takes the hassle out of passwords. You can use it on all your devices, iOS, Android, Mac, PC. Everything syncs seamlessly. And with top-notch security audits and encryption, your data stays private. So do yourself a favor and check out 1Password today. Go to 1Password.com/Clary and get a 2-week free trial. Let 1Password remember all of your logins for you so you can remember what really matters. That's 1Password.com/Clary for 2 weeks free.
That it strikes a chord, no matter what. It's raw. Any type of experience coming from somebody else that had trauma is still raw and real, but it's not as real as if you're telling your own story.
There's a common human phenomenon, which is there are things that we hide, mm-hmm. things that we think aren't the best about us. Maybe we should not tell people that. They may judge us. They may not like us. Let's show the really nice parts, the polished up, pretty parts. After the whole kidnapping happened, one of the things that I did was I said, screw it, all that happened so that I could become a model. I'm going to become a model. And I did. I was successful. I lived all over the world and, did some big campaigns and things. But what I learned in the process, I lived in Japan for a while, and I learned this principle called wabi-sabi. And it was explained to me like this. Wabi-sabi is, I was told, the most essential of all Japanese principles. It states that the beauty of any object lies in the flaws of the object. So something can be seen to be beautiful, exquisite, magnificent, only to the correlate degree to which it contains damages, imperfections, flaws. And at first I thought, what could this mean? Could this mean me? Because I felt completely ruined, as so many of us do, because of, hey, I grew up in poverty, or my dad was abusive, or I failed third grade 3 times, or I can't add very well, or I'm dyslexic, or whatever the hell we think about ourselves isn't great. And we hide those things rather than sharing them. And the moment we share them, and if you're an entrepreneur, along with what you do, the genesis of how you came to do what you do, people beat a path to your door then. And it's remarkable. And so often it's counterintuitive to think, wait, if I share, and I don't mean trauma share, I mean authentically, just be candid and transparent about stuff. Hey, I went through this. It's sweet. If we share that which we have previously believed is wrong with us, that profoundly connects us to everyone else who believes there's something wrong with them, which is virtually every human being, right?
You know, I didn't know if you were going to keep going. Sorry.
I
can jump in anytime if you want. I was just giving you the stage. You're on at something there. No, I fully agree. I mean, I think that's the human condition that people, that I think social is devoid of that. I think many people are very afraid to lean into that, but like you notice it when people do. So on a business side, some of the most successful creators are the people that tell their own story, and they tell again like the hurdles that they've dealt with. But I think that this is like the one thing that's very difficult to teach when you're trying to get somebody to get in front of a camera. It's very difficult to teach it when you're trying to get somebody to try and build a quote unquote personal brand. I don't come from traditional media the way you do. I come from more of like social and YouTubers and people on Instagram and prolific, you know, creators on Twitter. But still, it's like the rule is the same. It doesn't change across the media outlet. It's the realness. How do you capture that? Like now this is what you do for a living. You literally help people understand what their core messaging is and what real parts of their past and their history they should bring forward and use to tell a compelling story about what they're doing, what they're building, what they've experienced. How do you figure out what those pieces are?
It's often in the things that are hidden. So as soon as I had gotten my own message out in front of, just a large group of people, I said, you know what? My mission is changing. I am no longer going to help people overcome adversity. There's an industry dedicated to that. I am going to help. Took me 10 years to do that, and I was in the industry. It is impossible to figure that out. And so I brought together producers and directors and writers and journalists from TV and media and said, let's do this. Let's surround people and help them get known. And it's oftentimes the things that we want to hide. I think of, there's this husband and wife, they're college planners from Atlanta. They came to us, Danny and Karen, they're phenomenal. And they came to us saying, hey, wow. And that, like, it was during the pandemic, saying, no kids want to go to college anymore because it's virtual. No parents want to send their kids in case it goes back to being in person. We're going to close our doors after 10 years in business. What do we do? And I said, aha, I have some ideas. So let's get you in media. And Danny at first said, okay, I think we should sign an NDA. And I said, okay, you got it. I mean, obviously there's mutual confidentiality. What's the deal? And he said, I cannot let anyone know my story. And I was like, I'm listening. Now you've got my attention.
This is already a good client. You know there's something there. You've got to pull it out of them. Yeah.
And he's like, they're so wonderful, these two. And they have this great way of solving problems for people who want to go to college, getting them 4 years of education for the price of two and ensuring they graduate on time. I mean, like a parent's dream, a kid's dream who wants to go to college. And Danny's like, I cannot tell my story. Nobody can find out. I'll be out of business. And so, okay, well, what is the story? And he says, I was the quintessential son of an immigrant. My mom's from the Philippines, had five kids, worked five jobs, raising us on our own. College? Are you kidding? We couldn't keep food on the table. How was I going to go to college? I never went to college. But I want to ensure that every kid who has the dreams that I did can go. And I was like, that is what we're going to lead everything with. We'll help you tell this.
People get in their head a lot, don't they?
Right?
Wow, that's wild. God, that sounds like such a beautiful story. It's a great story.
No, he's not quite how he told it up front, but he was like, we can never say this. We cannot say I didn't graduate college. I couldn't go. I had no money. We were broke. That's what has people beat a path to their door. And they went from, hey, we got to go out of business, to hiring 28 other college planners. I mean, it's the kind of thing that, you know, you got two college planners. One, they say, hey, we're good. We can meet with you on Tuesday. And the other one has this story. Who the hell are you going to work with?
You're going to work with the person who's a human.
Yeah.
11 out of 10 times. It's not even a question, really.
Scott. 11 and a half.
I mean, why would you not? Listen. So I'm trying to play like, you know, I'm not trying to lean one way or the other, but like I'm building personal brand every single damn day. Like, I mean, I believe in the celebrity CEO. I feel like you have to remove the corporate veil and be a human. Some of the worst podcasts that I do are people that are buttoned up to the point where they can't be themselves. They're so buttoned up. And like, people don't know this, but sometimes when we do these podcasts, I'll remove the what's it called? Like the third wall or the whatever, I can't remember.
Fourth wall,
whatever. I'm not a drama theater kid. But like sometimes when you get on with these CEOs, like you'll have people from their HR and their legal team sitting off camera, making sure that they don't say the wrong thing. And I'm like, listen, like I can sign whatever you want me to sign to say that if this isn't perfect, then we won't air it. But like, please just have like the comfort of being yourself in this moment. And if you want to go off script and you want to talk about whatever shit happened to you that day, all of that is you. And that creates trust. You being you creates trust. If you are somebody who says, I won't go on the show unless we prep every single question and I memorize every single response, I'm sorry, but no one's going to give a shit about you. It's going to be boring. It's going to be non-emotional, and people can pick up on that. And they'll find someone else who they trust more, who is more real. So I'm not saying you don't work on your story, you don't work on your pitch, you don't work on how to tell it and how to communicate it, but it still has to be real. I'm sure you deal with that all the time. So, I mean, you're like really preaching to the choir, but
it's so, you bring up such a good point. There's, when I first started writing, what I did instead of like going out and shooting a TV pilot, because I didn't have any film background, I thought, what could I do quick and ways of to have like a proof of concept and see if people liked it? I did stand up and I wrote plays, because it's way cheaper to stage a play than try to shoot a movie. And then I realized a lot of actors were really flaky. So I just started doing one person plays because I was like, oh my God, these bastards won't even show up for rehearsal. So I'll just be all the parts. But they, you know, it did well enough, but I had to take acting class because I didn't know what I was doing. But the acting teacher, who was phenomenal, used to have this saying. She would say, pray for mistakes. And I was like, wait. Because no, I wanted to go perfectly. And she said, that's the time when your essence comes out. When things are not going the way you planned, and you can be real and raw and authentic. Pray for mistakes. And if that, what I posited before is true, that we all have something we're trying to hide in some way, that part that we think is wrong with us, praying for mistakes, mistakes occurring gives us a chance to show those things, reveal those things, and become profoundly related and connected to everybody else who's trying to hide the same shit.
I just want to take a second and thank the HubSpot Podcast Network for supporting Success Story. We're part of the network. If you love podcasts, the HubSpot Podcast Network has other incredible podcasts like Entrepreneurs on Fire, hosted by John Lee Dumas. Entrepreneurs on Fire is one of the OG entrepreneur podcasts. It really stokes inspiration, shares strategies to fire up your entrepreneurial journey to create the life you've always dreamed of. It has unlimited energy, value, and consistency. The podcast is truly for anyone who wants to learn more about entrepreneurship. If you like fast-paced, packed with value stories. This show is for you. John brings on great guests. He speaks about failures, aha moments, what's working for them currently. If you love podcasts, go listen to Entrepreneurs on Fire wherever you get your podcasts.
Leno, I have a question for you, because one of the beliefs that you hold, this is going to turn this on its head a little bit, but I know it's going to end up in the right spot. So one of the beliefs that you hold is that you shouldn't tell your story, you should tell their story. So now everyone's like, what the fuck, Scott? You just said, tell my story. I don't understand what you're going on about. You just said, tell my story, be authentic to me. What do you mean tell their story?
God, you're good. This is what I mean. Sometimes when we do an interview, it's like we will talk about the things that we think people want to hear, like benefits, deliverables. This is what I'm good at. This is where I studied. It becomes kind of the me show. Nobody gives a shit about that. Nobody really wants to know all that. They want to know, how does it relate to me? How do I hear myself in that? And if you can tell your story through their eyes, finding universal human themes, like the underdog, or good versus evil, or David versus Goliath, or something to have people go, yeah, me too. The audience comes to life. There was this, I think of things that we share. You know, so many of us have like body image things. And there was this campaign that came out, I don't know, a few years ago. Victoria's Secret had the Love Everybody campaign, or Love My Body campaign, or something like this. And it had the angels, you know, these perfect women with bodies that do not exist outside of some laboratory or whatever, God bless them. But like these perfect women, it was the Love Everybody campaign or something like this. And I was like, who do I, everybody? I don't know one body. And I was a freaking model. I don't know anybody that looks like that. Not anybody I know or have ever been.
True. But that's very true.
Then Dove, the soap brand, came up with a campaign right on the heels of that. And it was called something like, forgive me for not knowing the name, but so it was like, love your body. It was like the love your body. It was something just like it, like one word different. And it was like all these women in their underwear, just like Victoria's Secret. But it was like, old, young, all colors, shapes, sizes, abilities. Yeah. And looking at it, I found myself even recounting it to you now, getting moved and inspired by it. People started sharing a fucking ad on their social media because they're like, oh my God, there's a fat, short woman. I'm a fat, short woman. I've never felt pretty enough to be in my underwear, let alone they've got a campaign. And people would say, oh my gosh, that's like my neighbor, my mail carrier, me. And Dove sales like almost doubled, like 160% or 170% just jump in sales, because people felt like, wait, this is me. They're celebrating me. I've got these motherfuckers right here, Victoria's Secret, talking down to me. I will never look like the body I'm supposed to love. And then I've got people celebrating those who actually look like me. And that makes me feel celebrated. And I feel included and known and seen and heard. So if you can tell your story in a way that people say, oh, I feel that way too, that's what we all want, to be known and heard in a world where, by and large, particularly now with everybody having a microphone, we commonly feel unseen, unheard, ignored. Mm-hmm.
You know, so this is interesting because then the second thing that you do believe that I think ties into this as well is that, and there's going to be a path here. And I, because I know when you said being special buys you nothing, I know you meant it in a different context. I know you meant it from the context of, oh, I'm a successful entrepreneur. Why can't I get media? I think that's the context you meant it in. But I also think this ties into that thought you just had, which was being special buys you nothing, first of all, because there's someone who's more special than you, but also because it's not a relatable story. Because being special actually isolates you from the majority of people. And I think that, I mean, there's in news, maybe there's always shock and awe, but I think that a better version of a story to present if you are successful is actually not shock and awe. It's somebody that is, could be similar to you, that achieves something great, and not something that resonates with me, not somebody that is above and beyond. Like, if I think about the above and beyond, the stories that I care about are maybe like the people that are worth tens of billions or the Forbes 30 under 30 that end up in jail. I know I'm not going to be those things. So it's like a thing that I see and I watch, but really that's not what really inspires me or resonates with me. The stories that resonate with me is the entrepreneur that's a couple steps ahead of me, that I can see their journey and see where they came from. And like, that's what I want to read about. Those are the podcasts that I listen to. Those are the people that I'm like, shit. Yeah. He, she is not above and beyond what I am. They're just somebody that did this, that, and the other thing, and look at where they're at now. So it's not because they're special. It's because they're actually not special, which is why I actually like listening to them.
It seems, again, I too can do that. It's, I want to speak to the not being special in a moment, but I just saw a comedy special with Nate Bargatze. And he goes, like he talks about not being in shape. And then he sees this before and after shots and the you know, the guy who's so fit, it's like impossible, it's unattainable. The guy's so fit. And he goes, is the guy who did the before shot, is he doing a fitness class? Because I want to learn from him.
Yeah, exactly. You want to see people, and this is another, you follow the journey. This is why if you follow the fitness journey, you follow the entrepreneur journey, you tell people when you're starting to build stuff, when you're trying to go on a diet, whatever, and you follow through, those are the people that are super inspirational. This is now I see it a bit, like a lot. There's some guy on TikTok, Instagram, whatever. I think he's like a Russian guy, like shaved head. He was like 400 pounds. And then his entire audience is like, all the content that created the audience, which is like hundreds of thousands of followers, which is him just showing before and after of him putting on all this weight. I think he was a personal trainer. He like put on weight to prove a point, and then he lost it all. And this is all of his content, but it shows the journey. It shows that it's possible. It shows that average guy, well, I'd say most people are not 400 plus pounds, but guy who has gotten to this level with work and diet got to the end result of looking in shape, looking good, whatever. But the point is, yes, I think that the journey and the ability to see yourself in that person, that story really resonates. And that story will touch the most amount of people in a positive way, which is really what you want. You don't want to, again, I don't like, if I'm going to do media, I don't want it to be shock and awe. I want my story to be. I want my story to be inspirational. That's right. Really what I want. But anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
And that in a world of shock and awe, what stands out is the inspirational, is the calm when everything is clickbait and shock and awe and breaking news. That stands out. What I was speaking to with the special, like being special buys you nothing. There's patterns that I witness. There's a lot of people reach out to us every month. I don't know, thousands. And we speak to a lot of them. And I listen to the calls and what occurs and what is said. And one of the most common themes that I hear is, yeah, well, we're first to market, or we're different than what everybody else in our field doesn't do this. We're special. We're different. We're better. I'm front edge of the bell curve. Mine is patented. But no, everybody else in my field does it that way. We do it this way. And all of that, it stands to reason why it would be in the mind of the entrepreneur or the inventor, it guaranteed success. But the biggest thing that I hear is that I'm special. That's a myth. Like, that's going to ensure success. I mean, I remember listening to your interview about the Red Queen effect and how nothing is guaranteed. We've got to go so fast to catch up. And it is not that I'm different or special that is going to guarantee me anything. That coupled with everything else may be helpful or may give me a leg up, but there's none of being special without attention, without people knowing you or seeing or hearing, it doesn't matter. And I say that not to disavow anyone of their belief in being special, but rather to say, God, if you've got something that can help people, you must let them know. You must make it your job to get in front of them and let them know. People are quite literally dying without help. We've got a client who helps end eating disorders, and she's helped over 1,000 people, and it's remarkable. I kind of peek behind the curtain and working with her, and I was saying, well, what happens to these? She specifically helps women and girls. What happens to them without you? They die. And if you've got something that saves lives, and I don't care if you're a realtor and you got a better way for a person to get into a first-time home, or you're a dentist and you've got a mouth guard that stops concussion, I don't care what it is. Let them know you're here. But you can't ever do that if you get bought off by the fallacy that because I'm different, the world will find out about me. They will not. It is no longer the I'll hang up a shingle and people will find me. That world is dead and gone.
Don't be special. Be useful.
But let them know you're useful.
And then let them know you're useful. Well, I'll tell you. So like, I probably get 30 to 40 pitches for this show per day. And it's all about why am I special? Why am I special? You know who comes on this show? People that will teach something that no one else has taught before. People that will help people in a way that no one else has ever been able to help people before. If you write a book, don't come on the show and tell me that everything I ask you is in the book. That's not helping anybody. So, yeah, I mean, you're laughing because you're part of this world, right? But you know this happens. You know that this happens. Yes. When you said you made a whole bunch of mistakes when you were trying to tell your story, and you got like blacklisted from Good Morning America. What were some of those mistakes that you made? Like, how do you get blacklisted? Oh, Good Morning America. help people learn from that so they don't screw it up too.
People think another common thing that I hear all the time is, well, I know somebody, or who are you going to introduce me to at the Today Show or 60 Minutes or whatever? Mm-hmm. You do not want to be introduced to them until you are media trained. Until you can speak in sound bites, you have talking points, you know how to speak in such a way that other people are served, until you know how to tie your expertise and your work into current news cycles so that it's about something topical and not about your widget. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know that. And so I wasn't media trained. I wasn't any of these things. I was so verbose. I sent her paragraphs and pages and thousands of words. That was one thing. But then I did this huge mistake that I see people do all the time, where they reach out to a media gatekeeper and say, hey, I do this. How can you use me? It's like, hi, do my job for me. No, your job is to go research. What kind of a show do they use? What kind of segments do they what kind of segments do they have? What do they talk about? What have they talked about in the past? How is the evolution of what they've talked about come to bear over time? How long are their episodes? How long is the segment? What kind of guests have been there before? What kind of guests in your space? What are they talking about? What are they not talking about? What do they never, ever, ever address? Don't talk about those things. You have to know all that stuff going in, and you pitch the segments. You talk about the visual aids. You talk about the B-roll. You talk about all the things that they could incorporate. And why does their audience care? I did none of those things. I asked her to do my job for me. I did all these bad, horrible things. Mm-hmm. And I blew it. You know, do you ever know you're blacklisted? Well, by this point, I think it's...
Yeah. Is there a big difference if you were going to, media train somebody for primetime news or talk show? What is the biggest difference, who somebody is heavily involved in social, who's built an audience or a brand, between, call it traditional media, whatever you want to call it, and YouTube and Reels? Like, what's the thing that they are going to miss? Because there's going to be somebody who's listening to this who has built an audience on YouTube, and they're like, I have like 2 million subs. I think I'm media trained enough. They're probably missing something. I know for sure they are, because I know people that also just do traditional media, and there are nuances. What's the difference?
Your audience that you've built has a particular way they like to consume content. There's a particular kind of value you provide for them. You give them tangible takeaways in whatever way you do. The media source that also has millions of followers, or not subscribers perhaps, but how they do it, they have an audience that consumes content in a different way. They want takeaways in a distinct fashion. You can still impact that audience positively, but you have to first put your ear to the ground and find out, how does their audience consume content? What do they leave with? What kind of segments do they get the most bang for their buck on and that they continue to repeat? And how can I approximate what I do in that format and present it in such a way that the media platform is, oh, this is a no-brainer? Because I have relationships with, 50 or more.
Eufy is sponsoring today's video. They reached out to me. I tested out their video lock. It is a game changer. I'm going to paint a picture for you for why I'm so excited to work with them. So you're getting home, your arms are loaded with groceries or packages or boxes or everything, and your keys are in your pocket. This drives me nuts. This happens all the time. I upgraded to the Eufy video lock, fingerprint, tap, I'm inside. And honestly, I also feel way safer. It's got this awesome built-in camera. So whether it's a package delivery or late night Uber order, I see exactly who's there right from my phone. There are no more mystery knocks. And the best part, this thing was such a breeze to set up. There's no wires, there's no drilling. There's also no monthly subscription fees. So if you are done fumbling with your keys, because I definitely am, search for Eufy Video Lock or head over to eufyofficial.com/videolock. Your front door, your sanity. I just want to take a second and thank Policy Genius. They're supporting today's episode of Success Story. I know we all have kids. We all have families we want to take care of. And I personally checked something off major on my to-do list: life insurance. It's a tough topic. It's really hard to think about, but it's so important. And the hard part was sorting through all the options. Luckily, I found Policy Genius. Policy Genius is an online insurance marketplace that makes getting life insurance surprisingly easy. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Now, knowing my family's protected brings me incredible peace of mind. Don't put off this important decision. Check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. Thank you so much, Indeed, for sponsoring Success Story. For all business leaders out there, Indeed is a lifesaver. See, we're always driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You're going to ditch the busy work and you're going to use Indeed for scheduling, screening, messaging, so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Clary. Just go to Indeed.com/Clary right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Clary. Terms and conditions apply. If you need to hire, you need Indeed.
45, 50 gatekeepers at different media platforms. Mm-hmm. And they say something similar each time, which is, every time I put someone's name in the hat or pitch them up the food chain at work, my job is on the line. It may sound counterintuitive. One of our producers on our team has been producing network television for 30 years. How could her job be on the line? She's been in the DGA and the PGA and the blah, 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 blah. Every time, if someone goes in and screws up, they're like, Barbara, never again. She can't afford to have that happen. Nobody can. So you've got to make the decision for the gatekeeper such a no-brainer by removing all the barriers to entry for them so that they have no fear of pitching you, no fear of throwing your name in the hat. And once you've done that, you've let them know what's in it for them, the gatekeeper, personally. What's in it for the media source? What's in it for their audience? What all of those things, once you make that crystal clear and do it in a concise way, that's a soundbite, that when they get 500 emails a day, they're going to go, yes, you've done it for me. That right there can help remove those barriers to entry. And if you've got 2 million subscribers, by all means, say so.
Mm-hmm.
Because it makes their decision way easier and removes the barrier to entry.
But for people that aren't already famous, is there a right time when they should start approaching traditional media? Is it when you're raising a funding round? Is it you want to build more of an audience, a brand? Is it after you've accomplished something? Is there like a sweet spot, or is it everyone's subjective?
So there's, what is that old proverb? The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago.
Yes.
Second time is right in second.
Yes.
So often clients come to us and they're like, yeah, I launched a book. I've got a brand new book. And boy, I think I don't know if I should do it now or later. And we're like, when did your book come out? 4 months ago. Wait, that's so late. It's like Sisyphus trying to push that boulder up the hill and having it roll back down every day. No, you want to build renown before you launch anything. So you're not launching into a vacuum. You want to substantiate that you're the expert in your field long before you ask for funding or what have you. There's two different kind of lanes that we go in with. You know, yes, we do bespoke PR, but mostly what people want is to learn how to become their own publicist for the life of their brand. And we help them do that. And for those people, you want to start building relationships with the right gatekeepers at the right major media sources for you yesterday, 20 years ago, so that by the time your book comes out, or you've got an opening or a launch or something, you've got such a relationship with them. So you're no longer positioned as somebody who's like, please, will you please feature me? How could you use me? To, no, you're a peer or even a resource. When you're positioned as a resource with this gatekeeper, all bets are off. Those people appear on media all the time.
And you see them. Like you see them repeatedly. You see them all the time. Whenever there's a segment,
yep,
that's when the gatekeeper reaches out to those people. But they've had the relationship for X amount of years ahead of time.
Or weeks or months. It's no longer the media. I talked about how it's no longer the business days of old where you hung up a shingle, put it up on Main Street. We're now open Saturdays and people wouldn't run to you. excuse me, media is not the same anymore either. It used to be back in the days of Walter Cronkite or Edward R. Murrow, they had 1 hour of news to fill a night. That's it. They had a team of people working around the clock to fill an hour. Now they got 24 hours. And your boss is on your back day and night. What are you getting? What do you got for me? I need something good. This one's got a hit. We've got sweeps coming up. No producer can come up with that much content on their own. So if you've got a message and you've got expertise and you can serve their audience, you need to get out there to them and have a relationship with them because they need you as much as you want them. And if you can leverage that 24-hour news cycle to your advantage by creating things that they want to feature, they will be reaching out to you all the time. I've got clients like that right now. Anytime there's something political, anytime there's national security, I've got this client, Jean Moran, and every time there's something happening, some drone strike, some this, some action, some...
That's the go-to.
They have to call him.
When you say the problem isn't the mess, the problem is the messenger, not the message, what does that mean? Because then again, these are all ideas that, without context, they're counter to what we just spoke about.
It's that kind of bravado, like, yeah, I did Toastmasters, or I've founded three companies. I don't need
me. The ego. It's the ego. Okay.
Kinda, right? I know they said not to talk about my business, but I'm going to talk about my business instead of talking about what you're there to talk about and weaving through your business story such that people will beat a path to your door. But it's the arrogance of thinking it'll be different with you because, after all, you're special.
You know what it is? I think that social media removed gatekeepers from creating audiences. So you can build an audience, but a lot of people don't monetize their audience the way they should. They don't leverage the audience the way they should. And they probably don't have a lot of people telling them that they suck. You get a lot of trolls in the comments, but people actually saying that your messaging is not good. You should do this, that, or the other. Or if your messaging is really bad, you're just not getting accepted. But if you pressure test yourself against media gatekeepers that they need your message to hit and drive ratings at a massive scale that you probably day one will never have access to on a YouTube or a TikTok or whatever. Like, this isn't actually a really good way to see if your message hits home. Because now it's no longer you just putting out content and you building an audience with an algorithm that may or may not serve you. It's putting out content that there's professionals that gatekeep and will tell you if you suck, which is actually very useful feedback for a creator. If you're like a prolific creator or if you're just starting out. But I'm just thinking through this now. I don't do traditional media. I do podcasts. Unless you tell me that it sucks, like, I guess downloads, whatever, but maybe it could be 50% better if I, you know, buttoned up my media training, went to try and talk about entrepreneurship, business, whatever, try and get on Squawk Box or something like that. Nobody's listening to me. I'm like, oh shit, I better figure out what I stand for, the story that I want to tell. And then maybe I carry that into my actual content. I don't know. I'm just thinking.
Evolve or die, right? It's such a smart idea. Like, in one regard, you don't have to. And at the same time, for each of us, if we don't evolve, if we don't iterate and optimize and test and continue to push outside of our comfort zone, somebody else will.
Mm-hmm. And I do believe that storytelling is the single most useful skill that a person can master, because it translates into raising money, selling to a customer, bringing an employee into your company, building an audience, whatever. It's so, so valuable. Anything that tests your storytelling ability, I think it's something you should lean into.
When you look at the clients that you've worked with over your career, what is the biggest misconception that they think about when they're starting to go into media? We'll leave everyone with like one last final lesson that you've sort of seen again and again and again that you just want to like quash right now, whether or not they work with you, somebody else. What is the one thing they have to like really get out of their head?
That being introduced to a gatekeeper is a big one. But you know, look, it might sound counterintuitive, like I'm shooting myself in the foot here, but people think, oh, I'll just go hire a publicist. Mm-hmm. And that's going to do it for me. And the challenge with that is, look, there's a lot of publicists on every main street and every town in the world because people have to be seen, particularly if you've got a business and want to help people. But the way publicists work is they have to have something to publicize. And the publicists that can get you on TV, the publicists who can really get A-plus major media for you, the kind that everybody comes in our door wanting, those people only work with celebrities. When I used to write TV at, like, I remember being on one show at Paramount Pictures. When I used to write at Paramount Pictures, I saw the line item for publicity, and I was like, how many hundreds of thousands of dollars? What? Why did they get that kind of money? Well, because if they get even one appearance, it's worth 10 times, 1,000 times the ROI. But the problem is, you know, if you just go to a Main Street publicist, they don't have connections, and they own the connections that they do have. And anything that they do for you, like, you don't get the messaging, that you are excerpted from the process. Like, if you were to miraculously, with some Main Street publicist, I'm calling it, land some media appearance, they would go with you and speak to the media person as your proxy. They circumvent you at all turns. And it's the weirdest construct. You're there to be an expert, but you can't even speak to the person. Wait, what? But it's, furthermore, they may have 50, 100 clients, 1,000 clients. Do you think what you do matters to them when you're handed off to some junior associate? There's some value in actually learning to do it yourself. Kind of like doing your own social or doing your own, I don't know, marketing. I mean, yeah, some people outsource that, but if nobody's ever going to be a brand champion for you like you will be for yourself. And there's a lot of things that, as we grow in business, we want to outsource. Oh my God, I can't possibly do that anymore. I got to hand that off. It's taking all my time. I have no more time to eat or talk to my family. There's a lot of things to outsource, but be judicious in what those are.
Very, very smart. If you wanted to tell your 20-year-old self, even younger, if you want to tell your younger self one thing, what would that thing be after life has happened to you, career has happened to you, horrible things, positive things, you go back, what's that one lesson?
Oh God, I want to quote Bob Marley.
You're good at, you got some good fire quotes going. I appreciate you a lot. Not everybody
Michael,
has it.
Don't worry about a thing. Because every little thing is going to be all right. And I mean, I think that is seminal for us to keep in mind at any time, right? It is all. What is that quote? Oh God, it's all going to work out in the end. And if it hasn't worked out yet, it's not the end.
I like that a lot. Where should people connect with you? Where do you want to send people? So you have a couple different things that you're working on. When I look at your Instagram, so what do we have here? We have...
Don't shame me on my Instagram.
What's wrong with your Instagram?
No, I don't, just don't. I've been bad and not posting. I've just been serving our clients. And I'm like, must to post on social media about something other than it's International French Friday.
But listen, that's the human in you coming out. Nothing wrong with that. French fries are delicious.
Loving French fries. Yeah.
We've got CherylHunter.com. That's where a lot of this is.
That's the best place. Yep.
Okay. So you have, first of all, like, you have incredible interviews. I'm very honored to be interviewing you. You have incredible interviews up here. Obviously, if people want help with their PR, they work with you in the capacity where they're learning to do it themselves, but you're also helping them with it along the way, right? So you
we do both, you know, depending on what somebody needs.
Okay, perfect.
And you know, whatever is the right fit for them. So yeah, CherylHunter.com is my website. If that is a path you want to go down, CherylHunter.tv is the place to go. Now, it's not always TV, but that's what, you know, we'll talk.
And I think the Instagram's fine, but it's Hunter Cheryl on Instagram. But you have you can keep building that. There's a beautiful video from Goldcast. You have your books on there, like whatever. French fries are fine, no problem with that. Last question that I ask everybody before we close this out: if you're going to look at your life and your future, and forget career success, because we can all talk about how big we want to build our business or how much money we want to make or how much wealth we want to create or how much impact we want to create. But for you personally, at this stage in your life, what does success mean for you?
When I look at the challenges that we are facing in life and in the world, right? The problems of the world right now, I think they could all be solved if people who had great solutions had a microphone and had a real platform. And they could, like, there's this client we have who is a professor and a data scientist who is using AI with other physicians and doctors around the world to cure cancer right now. And I'm like, what? I'm not worthy. If these people had access to a real microphone, the same way that somebody, what's the guy right now who's eating raw chicken on social media?
I don't know. Yeah, I saw that. Very strange.
You know, if the people who were doing good work had as big of a platform and their voice was heard, that would be true success. I think we could solve everything that ails us as a species.
I love that. Cheryl, thank you. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for everything you've done over your career. Thank you for everything you've done with helping people that have gone through very difficult times. But also thank you for everything you're doing now to amplify people's voices, because I agree, that is success. That is success. If more people had that microphone, I think a lot of people would benefit. So thank you for doing that. Thanks for coming on.